Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in, everyone.
So I want you to imagine a mechanic, but they aren't just doing some routine oil change on a standard sedan.
Right, they're doing something much bigger.
Exactly. This mechanic is trying to build a revolutionary new sports car. Now, the traditional, sensible way to do this would be to sit at a drafting table, you slowly design slightly more aerodynamic mirrors, you incrementally tweak the gear ratios, and you test it out over thousands of hours.
Which is how normal engineering works. It's slow.
Very slow. But our mechanic doesn't have time for that. Instead, they just walk out to an airfield, unbolt a massive jet engine from a commercial airplane, drag it back to the garage, and somehow wire it directly into the sports car's existing dashboard.
I mean, that sounds like a recipe for a catastrophic failure.
Oh, totally.
The electrical systems just wouldn't match up. The fuel lines would be completely incompatible. You'd expect the entire thing to just, well, short circuit before you even turn the key.
That is the logical assumption, right? But in this scenario, the mechanic turns the key, the car's dashboard integrates seamlessly with the jet turbine, and the vehicle just takes off down the highway.
Wow.
It's this improbable triumph of engineering by outright theft. And that wild concept, stealing foreign parts and wiring them into an existing system, is exactly what we are exploring today.
The analogy fits perfectly, honestly, because we often think of biological evolution as this slow, methodical tinkerer working gradually over eons.
Right, the drafting table.
Exactly. But sometimes it behaves like your impatient mechanic. It aggressively repurposes whatever is lying around to get immediate results.
And that brings us to the mission for today's deep dive. Today we celebrate the work of Rishabh Kapoor, Cassandra Extabor, and their entire research team, who have advanced our understanding of genomics with a 2026 paper published in PNAS.
Yeah, it's a monumental piece of research.
It really is. Our goal today is to understand how the largest group of animals on Earth, the arthropods, so that covers everything from insects and spiders to crabs and shrimp, how they have evolved by literally fusing their own DNA with genes stolen from completely different kingdoms of life.
And we're looking at a massive, comprehensive data set here. The research team scanned 319 high-quality arthropod genomes.
319. That is a lot of data to sift through.
It's a staggering amount. And they weren't looking for a few isolated anomalies either. They wanted to uncover how nature uses genomic bricolage.
Bricolage. That's French for tinkering, right?
Basically, yeah. It's the act of creating something new from a diverse range of available things. They wanted to see how evolution uses this tinkering to build entirely novel biological tools.
Which fundamentally challenges the baseline assumptions of how how I was taught biology.
Oh, me too.
When you learn about the tree of life, it's always drawn like this massive oak tree. You start with the trunk at the bottom, and as time goes on, it splits into these big, distinct branches.
Right, you get plants, animals, bacteria, fungi.
Yeah, and the golden rule was always that once a branch splits off, it doesn't cross back over. A branch of the animal kingdom doesn't just spontaneously merge with a branch of bacteria.
Right. That traditional Mendelian view of inheritance assumes genes are only passed down vertically, from parent to offspring.
With mutations just slowly accumulating over millions of generations.
Exactly. But this paper provides overwhelming evidence that those branches are actually tangling. They are actively swapping genetic material in ways we previously thought were just, impossible for complex animals.
So to really grasp how strange these genetic mashups are, we need to separate the idea of just picking up a random spare part from the act of actually wiring it into the engine block.
That's a great distinction. The broader concept of picking up foreign DNA is known as horizontal gene transfer, or HGT.
HGT, okay.
That is the acquisition of genes from other species rather than from a parent. Now, in the bacterial world, this happens constantly.
Right, bacteria swap plasmids and stuff all the time,
yeah.
Right?
All the time. It's actually the primary way antibiotic resistance spreads through a hospital. They just trade these tiny circles of DNA.
But for animals, for complex multicellular animals, that was supposed to be super rare.
Exceedingly rare. For decades, the scientific consensus held that horizontal gene transfer just didn't really happen much in animals.
Which makes sense anatomically. I mean, if you think about it, a single-celled bacterium is exposed directly to its environment.
Right.
But for an animal to pass on a stolen gene, that foreign DNA has to somehow reach the germline. It has to get into the protected sperm or egg cells deep inside the body.
The barriers to entry are incredibly high. Yet, over the last few years, genomic sequencing has revealed that arthropods are a major exception to this rule.
They're just breaking all the rules.
Pretty much. They are frequently picking up full genes from bacteria, viruses, fungi, and even plants.
Which is wild on its own.
It is a total paradigm shift. However, this new paper focuses on the next, much rarer evolutionary leap. They weren't just looking for stolen genes sitting isolated on a chromosome. They were hunting for HGT chimeras.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because when I hear chimera, I think of Greek mythology. Like the monster with a lion's head, a goat's body, and a serpent's tail all fused together.
That is the perfect mental image for this. Because in a genetic context, an HGT chimera occurs when a horizontally acquired foreign gene physically fuses with an ancient native animal gene.
They literally weld together.
Yes. And the fusion is so precise that it creates a single continuous reading frame.
Wait, really? So the cell doesn't see them as two different things?
Nope. Instead of reading them as two separate instructions, it reads them as one single gene that produces a brand new hybrid protein.
It's the equivalent of downloading the firmware from a smart toaster and somehow making it run natively inside your smartphone's core operating system.
That is exactly what it's like.
The fact that the cell can even parse the instructions without crashing is astonishing to me. And the sheer scale of this discovery is what really caught my attention. Because out of those 319 arthropod genomes, they found 274 highly confident HGT chimeras.
Right. And by analyzing the evolutionary history of those sequences, the researchers determined that these 274 chimeras represent at least 104 independent origination events.
Meaning it wasn't just one freak accident that got passed down.
Exactly. This fusion process has happened independently, over and over again, across the evolutionary timeline of insects and crustaceans.
I was looking at the breakdown of where they actually stole this DNA from,
right.
And it's basically a biological free-for-all. Out of the events they could definitively trace, they pulled from bacteria over 60 times, fungi 21 times, and viruses 15 times. They even ripped code from plants on three separate occasions.
Yeah, the plant ones are especially wild.
Right. How does a mosquito or a shrimp even get access to plant or bacterial DNA in a way that allows it to infiltrate their genome?
It all comes down to ecological proximity. The paper notes that a significant portion of the bacterial sequences come from known arthropod endosymbionts.
Endosymbionts, so things living inside them.
Exactly. Take Wolbachia, for example. It's a type of bacteria that literally lives inside the cells of many insects.
Inside the actual cells?
Yes, including their reproductive tissues. And the viral sequences often match viruses known to specifically infect arthropods.
Okay, so these incredibly intimate, often parasitic or symbiotic relationships provide the physical closeness. The foreign DNA just sort of leaks into the host's genetic material.
Precise.
Now, I have to play devil's advocate for a moment here, because I'm a geneticist, and I run a mosquito's DNA through a sequencer, and the computer spits out a chunk of bacterial code right next to insect code, my faint assumption isn't going to be some evolutionary miracle.
What is your first assumption?
I'm going to assume contamination. Like, someone sneezed on the petri dish, or the insect just had a severe bacterial infection when we ground it up for analysis.
Right, the blender just mashed them all together.
Exactly. How do the researchers prove these are legitimate, functioning hybrid genes, and not just a sloppy lab error?
That is a crucial question, and the authors of the study anticipated that exact skepticism. A massive portion of their methodology is dedicated to rigorously proving these chimeras are biologically real.
So what do they do?
They constructed a stringent four-phase computational pipeline to weed out false positives. First, they discarded any DNA sequences coming from short, fragmented genomic reads.
Because that's where lab contamination usually hides, right?
Exactly. When you chop DNA up too small, it's easy to accidentally stitch a bacterial fragment next to an insect fragment in the computer. So they threw all those out.
So they only focused on the gold standard long-read genome assemblies, the ones where you can clearly see the broader context of the entire chromosome.
Yes. From there, they applied advanced phylogenetic mapping. They didn't just check a database to see if a sequence looked roughly similar to a bacteria.
They went deeper.
Much deeper. They built deep evolutionary family trees for both halves of every single chimera. The statistics had to definitively prove that one half of the gene belonged firmly in a known family of animal genes, while the other half nested unmistakably within a family of foreign genes, like bacteria or fungi.
Okay, so the computer modeling is rock solid. But eventually you need physical proof, don't you? Like, proof that these bugs are actually using the genes in the real world.
You do. And the researchers secured that physical evidence. They acquired tissue samples from 20 different species of living arthropods that their models predicted would harbor these chimeras.
So they went out and got real bugs.
Real bugs. We are talking about extracting RNA directly from the cells of living marine shrimp, mosquitoes, and damselflies. And then they performed RT-PCR on those samples.
Now, I think a lot of people are familiar with PCR tests after the last few years.
Very true.
But just to clarify, RT-PCR allows scientists to see if a specific sequence of genetic code is actively being transcribed by the cell into messenger RNA, right?
That's exactly it. It proves the cell is awake, it's reading the instructions, and it's actively trying to build the protein.
So it differentiates a working gene from just dead, leftover junk DNA.
Yes. And the results of those physical tests were overwhelming. They found continuous mRNA transcripts for 36 out of the 41 chimeras they tested, spanning 18 different species.
Wow. They literally caught the cells red-handed, reading the toaster code perfectly integrated with the smartphone code.
They really did. But you know, transcription alone doesn't actually prove the gene is beneficial.
Wait, it doesn't?
No. A cell can transcribe junk if it's placed next to an active promoter. To prove these chimeras actually matter to the survival of the animal, they looked at evolutionary conservation using a metric called the DN to DS ratio.
Okay, DN to DS sounds like we're drifting into advanced calculus. Walk me through the mechanism here without the algebra, if you can.
I can definitely do that. What's fascinating here is you can think of the DN and DS ratio like an evolutionary spell checker.
A spell checker, okay.
When DNA replicates, mutations or typos naturally occur, but sometimes a typo happens and it doesn't actually change the meaning of the word.
Because multiple codes can make the same amino acid.
Exactly. In genetics, this is called a synonymous mutation. The resulting amino acid stays the exact same. Evolution largely ignores these invisible typos.
Okay, so the invisible typos are the DS part. But what happens when the typo does change the word?
That is a non-synonymous mutation, the DN part. It changes the amino acid, which actually alters the shape and function of the protein.
And changing the shape of a protein is usually a big deal.
It's a huge deal. If a protein is already perfectly tuned to do an essential job for the animal, changing its shape is a terrible idea. When those meaning-altering typos occur, natural selection acts like an aggressive spell checker and rejects them.
Because the animal with that mutation is less likely to survive and reproduce. So by comparing the rate of the invisible typos to the rates of the rejected word-changing typos, you can see how heavily evolution is guarding that specific piece of code.
You've got it. That process is called purifying selection. If the DN to DS ratio is well below 1, it tells us the spell checker is on high alert. Evolution is actively rejecting changes to the protein.
And what did the data in the paper show for these chimeras?
It showed that for the chimeras found in multiple species, nearly all of them have a ratio far below 1.
Wow.
This proves definitively that evolution is actively protecting these hybrid sequences over millions of years. The animals rely on them for survival.
So the proof of life is undeniably solid. These fusions are real, they are actively transcribed, and they're protected by natural selection.
Absolutely.
Now we need to look at what happens when these bizarre genetic fusions are actually deployed in the wild. The paper highlights several distinct examples, and what's fascinating to me is how they reveal the underlying logic of this evolutionary theft.
It's very logical when you look closely.
Right, so instead of just listing them out, let's start by looking at why a random fusion of two totally different genes would ever survive in the first place.
The best window into that question comes from one of the oldest chimeras they found. It's located in tiny aquatic organisms called microcrustaceans, specifically copepods.
Okay, copepods. How old is this one?
This particular chimera is ancient. It dates back roughly 446 million years to the last common ancestor of living copepods.
446 million years. That is a gene fusion that survived the dinosaurs and multiple mass extinctions. What are the two halves of this ancient chimera?
It is a physical fusion between an animal chitin binding domain and a bacterial chitin deacetylase domain.
Gee, that's the tough fibrous carbohydrate that makes up the hard exoskeletons of insects and crustaceans, right?
Exactly. It's shell material.
So the native animal half of the gene is designed to bind to the shell material, and the stolen bacterial half is an enzyme designed to chemically modify that exact same shell material. They both work in the same biological wheelhouse.
And this is a crucial insight into chimera survival. If an animal accidentally fuses an optical receptor meant for the eye with a digestive enzyme meant for the gut,
the resulting protein is just biological nonsense.
Right. The spell checker will delete it. But in the case of the copepod, fusing two components that already interact with chitin meant the new hybrid gene was functionally coherent from day one.
It was born ready to do useful work.
Exactly, which ensured it survived natural selection.
Okay, so the copepod explains why a chimera sticks around. But physically, how does that fusion actually happen? I mean, does a mosquito just steal a bacterial gene and violently stitch it into its own chromosome in one freak simultaneous accident?
A chimera found in mosquitoes provides a really compelling answer to that mechanical question. This one is at least 92 million years old.
Okay.
It fuses a native animal DNA binding domain known as a zinc finger with a fragment of a fungal harbinger transposon.
A transposon, that's essentially a jumping gene, right? A piece of DNA that can cut and paste itself around a genome.
You got it.
So we have an animal DNA reader meeting a fungal jumping gene. Based on the data, did this happen all at once?
No, actually. The phylogenetic trees built by the researchers suggest a more methodical two-step process. First, the theft occurs. The insect acquires the fungal jumping gene through horizontal gene transfer, and it simply parks itself in the genome as a standalone, non-chimeric piece of code.
Wait, really? It just sits there?
Yeah. The researchers actually found non-chimeric, standalone versions of this exact fungal gene in related fly species.
So it's just chilling in the genome, potentially for millions of years. Mm-hmm. What triggers the fusion then?
The catalyst is often a gene duplication event. During cellular division, either the animal gene or the foreign fungal gene gets accidentally copied.
Ah, okay.
This is incredibly valuable because it provides a biological spare part. The original gene can keep doing its vital job while the duplicated spare part is free to mutate or fuse without harming the animal.
That makes total sense.
Over time, that spare animal domain physically merged with the foreign fungal domain.
Because both the animal zinc finger and the fungal transposon naturally interact with DNA. It's like finding a fungal instruction manual and co-opting it to run mosquito genetics.
Exactly. The researchers suspect this fungal parasite fragment was domesticated to serve as an entirely new gene regulator for the mosquito.
It's brilliant. But if we want to talk about how these fusions drive rapid, real-time adaptation, the damselfly example is probably the most striking one in the paper.
Oh, the damselfly chimera is a dramatic showcase of neofunctionalization. That's when a gene takes on an entirely new function.
Right, and this specific chimera fuses an animal transporter with a bacterial transporter that likely came from an endosymbiont living inside the insect.
Yes, and both of these parts are transmembrane proteins. They sit inside the cell wall and act as pumps, moving molecules in and out of the cell.
Here's where it gets really interesting. When you look at the DN to DS ratio, our evolutionary spell checker, how does the normal animal gene compare to the chimera?
The contrast is staggering. The non-chimeric, normal animal version of this cell pump is under incredibly strict conservation. Its ratio is near zero.
Meaning evolution allows almost no changes to its structure, It does its job, and mutations are severely punished.
Right. But when that pump fused with the stolen bacterial pump,
what happened?
The fused chimera showed strong positive selection. Its ratio shot up well past one.
Wait, it went over one. If a ratio below one means the spell checker is deleting typos, a ratio above one means the spell checker is actually rewarding the typos, right?
Yes. Natural selection was suddenly favoring every mutation that changed the shape of this new hybrid protein. It basically hit the fast forward button on adaptation.
So the moment it fused, evolution went into overdrive to rapidly adapt this new tool. The biological implication here is just profound.
It really is. When that fusion happened, the damselfly suddenly had a novel molecular pump in its cell membranes. It was aggressively adapted to deal with a new environmental pressure.
Do we know what it's pumping?
While we don't know the exact molecule it pumps yet, these types of transporters are often involved in processing environmental toxins, managing osmotic stress in aquatic environments, or regulating new metabolic pathways.
So the bacterial fusion just gave the damselfly a cheat code to rapidly adapt to a new ecological niche.
Exactly. And we even see this happening in much more recent evolutionary history. They found a chimera in 3 species of marine shrimp that originated less than 83 million years ago.
Which is relatively young in the grand scheme of things.
Very young. It fuses a secreted animal cell signaling domain with a bacterial enzyme designed to break chemical bonds.
So you have marine shrimp pumping out a protein into their bodies that has the communication receiver of an animal, physically welded to the chemical breaking tools of a bacterium.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, that combination perfectly encapsulates the larger takeaway of this research. It completely reshapes our understanding of evolutionary innovation.
Because the traditional view of evolution is heavily focused on the slow accumulation of microscopic point mutations over eons, right?
Right.
The mechanic sitting at the drafting table slowly tweaking the aerodynamics.
Precisely. But this paper proves that evolution is also an aggressive, opportunistic tinkerer. It relies heavily on bricolage.
The tinkering.
Yes. When an organism faces an immediate existential biological problem, like a new predator, a shifting climate, or a novel toxin, it doesn't always have the luxury of waiting millions of years for a random point mutation to save it.
It needs a solution now.
So sometimes it reaches into its environment, grabs a viral sequence or a bacterial enzyme from its own gut microbiome, and violently repurposes it into a new genetic tool.
So what does this all mean for you as you navigate the world? If you're trying to understand biology, medicine, or even just how agricultural pests manage to adapt so quickly to new pesticides, you can no longer just look at the slow mutation of existing genes.
No, you can't.
You have to look for the jet engines wired into the dashboards. You have to actively hunt for horizontal gene transfer and chimera formation, because it turns out the tree of life is incredibly tangled, and species are constantly borrowing from one another to survive.
And honestly, the methodology is just as important as the discovery here. The researchers explicitly point out that traditional computational search methods would completely miss these chimeric genes.
They'd just toss them out as errors.
Exactly. They'd misclassify them as contamination. By developing these advanced phylogenetic pipelines, they have given us a new lens to view a hidden layer of biology. We are just barely scratching the surface of how common this genomic theft might truly be.
It adds such a fascinating layer of ingenuity to arthropod evolution. They are, by far, the most successful and diverse group of animals on the planet. And this aggressive genetic thievery might be a massive part of their secret to survival.
I agree completely.
I really want to thank you for guiding us through the mechanics of HGT chimeras. Unpacking the deep evolutionary history behind these sequences really helps clarify just how dynamic the genome really is.
Oh, it was my pleasure. The Kapoor and Exivor paper is a landmark piece of research. It just forces us to rethink the boundaries between species and kingdoms.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought to mull over. We spent this entire deep dive talking about the bizarre genetics of insects, microcrustaceans, and marine shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
But humans are animals too. We share the same fundamental biology. If the largest group of animals on Earth is constantly borrowing and fusing DNA from bacteria, fungi, and viruses to adapt to new environments, what about us?
That is the big question.
Could the next major breakthrough in understanding human evolution, or even complex human diseases, come from finding the hidden viral or bacterial ghosts stitched seamlessly into our own genetic machinery? Are we driving a sports car with a stolen jet engine, and we just haven't developed the right tools to look under the hood yet?
It's definitely something to think about.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. Something new.
grade with a name. Pieces that shouldn't fit fall into place. A borrowed line, a homegrown interface. Duplicated doors, then one swings wide. And something living learns to multiply. Not every